Fox on it.
Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Attention, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset. With your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A and I've pooled my questions from Snapchat and Instagram. Probably my two most active platforms at the minute. Absolutely loving Instagram and Snapchat. I'm spending an ungodly amount of time on the DMs on Instagram at the minute. So thanks so much to anyone that's DM'd about the podcast. Let me know what you like. Anyone that's picked up the book, sending me on, mentioning me on their story. Massive thank you for that. So I'm trying to get back to everyone that I can. There's a lot of DMs coming in on Instagram. So be sure to check me out on there, Brian Keane Fitness, and my Snapchat, BrianK019. So first question today comes in from Keane23 on Snapchat. Starting a law degree this month, any supplements to improve my studying? Okay, so the first thing here is I'm going to talk on a couple of supplements that are kind of brain-boosting supplements that tend to work very, very well. But the number one thing is going to be getting your nutrition right. So nothing and no supplement is going to help if you're not eating good foods or you're eating foods that are going to increase the inflammation in your body, which will effectively increase the inflammation in your brain, which means you won't be able to concentrate as well, and that means you won't be able to retain information while you're studying as effectively as if your nutrition was good. So I would minimize the amount of processed foods you're eating, and in college it's a little bit harder because you don't have a lot of money, you may not have a lot of knowledge on cooking. I remember when I went into my first year of college, I used to live on microwave rice because I didn't know how to cook anything, and packets of chicken. But it will serve you to learn that the couple of foods that are very, very easy to prepare that are going to help and support you in the year ahead that are pretty cheap, that aren't going to mess with the inflammation in your body. So the main thing that people get caught on in college and in life in general is your fast food and takeaways, because they're handy. Your McDonald's, your Domino's, your pizza that gets delivered to your doors, they're all very convenient and very handy. But they're loaded with trans fatty acids, they're not great foods for your body, and they are going to increase the amount of inflammation that you have, which will effectively reduce the amount of your brain's capacity to restore, retain information if there's too much inflammation in there. Dave Asprey has a lot on this in his book, The Bulletproof Diet. Now, I don't fully agree with his bulletproof diet and his coffee and butter and all these things that come with it. But his research on inflammation in the brain is really good. The section in that book and his second book, which is Headstrong, talks a lot about brain inflammation. And the studies that he's sourced are pretty reputable studies. So he talks a lot about different foods, different glutens, different dairies that can cause inflammation in your brain. But the main ones to avoid are going to be your fast food. So I would minimize the amount of time you have that. Once a week is going to be fine. Twice a week, potentially, if you're factoring it in. But when you have your nutrition right and you're eating a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruits, a lot of good quality meats and fish, and you're using things like your basmati rice or your brown rice, which is really, really cheap, your porridge oats, which again, you're getting the Tesco or Dunn's or Sainsbury's brand, regardless of where you are in the world, you can get very, very cheap oats, very, very cheap rice, and you can get vegetables effectively very cheap, and fruits that are all going to make sure that your body is not only performing at its best in the gym or on the pitch if you're an athlete, but you're also going to improve your study in your classroom. I have a couple of people coming through, or I have a lot coming through my GEA youth program at the minute, and there's a study module in there talking about how to reduce inflammation in your diet that's going to improve your concentration in school. It's the same with college. So what you want to make sure you're doing is that you've got your nutrition right first, and then these are the supplements I would add in that will help your study over the next year. So the first one is going to be omega-3. I'm a massive fan of omega-3. Now, getting it from food is going to always be the best. So your oily fish, your flax seeds that are loaded with omega-3, you're always going to choose a food as an option first. However, as a college student, you may not have that much money. And if you don't, what I would do is I would check out the podcast episode I did way back when I spoke on how to get lean or get bigger or how to get fit on a budget. So for those of you that know, I have 2 degrees. I have an honors degree in business. I have a postgraduate in teaching. So I went through nearly 5 years of study where I had very little money. So I learned how to squeeze every single penny and still stay in shape so that I was able to eat decent food that supported my physique and supported my sporting performance at the time. I then went on to become a teacher for 4 years in London, and the wages of teaching in London, when you're factoring in the cost of your rent and your lifestyle, I had to use those tips and tricks to stay fit or get fitter on a massive budget because I didn't have a lot of income at the time. So I would check out that episode for sure if you're a college student. I think it's episode 6 or 7 of the podcast. So assuming that you've got all your foods and you're eating good quality clean foods, you may want to supplement back in a strong omega-3. EPA and DHA are the two active compounds, the two active ingredients in omega-3. And you want to make sure that your omega-3 capsule has at least half or just under half of EPA and DHA in the ingredient list. So for example, if you get an omega-3, you want 1,000 milligram tablet of omega-3, you want at least 450 micrograms of EPA and DHA. And you look at the ingredient list, you'll see it. Omega-3 and probiotics are the two supplements that I tell people never to cheap out on, because you will get what you pay for with those. I would get a good high quality omega-3 that you don't need to take a lot of, and then that's gonna help your inflammation in your body. It'll reduce your inflammation. It's why it's so good for people that have issues with their hair, for overall health and inflammation in the body. But it'll also improve your cognition in the classroom and your ability to retain information because of all the EPA and DHA and the effect that that has on your brain as somebody that's studying. The next thing is going to be one of my personal favorites, and that's a natural nootropic called phytosylserine. This is a little bit of a look of a supplement that I got. I remember talking, and I prepped Amanda from Recalibrated Bodies. She was on the podcast. I prepped her for a show. She's a friend of mine herself and Daniel. And she was telling me about this natural nootropic, phytosylserine, and how it was really good for brain cognition. So I actually started researching it. And then I realized that athletes were taking this nootropic in higher doses to reduce inflammation in the body to improve sporting performance. So I started experimenting with it for performance to see would it reduce the inflammation in my body and improve performance. I didn't find it did that much in that area, but what I did find was I was remembering way more from the audiobooks I was listening to or the physical books I was reading on the days that I took the phytosylserine. Now, you're always going to be eligible for the placebo effect when you hear some supplement does something and then you take it and it confirms what you thought it was going to do. But I have noticed on the days when I've ran out of phytosylserine for a week or 10 days that my retention isn't quite as good as the days I'm taking it. So now I take it religiously. I come off it every 6 weeks and I'll take a couple of weeks break just to kind of clear out any receptor that may be doing anything that's natural nootropic that hasn't been massively studied yet. I don't mess around with it too much, purely because it's not as scientifically backed as caffeine or creatine, but it's something that I do find helps a lot. And again, it's very easy to get. I get mine on iHerb or aggressivehealth.com. Most health stores will have it as well. And then finding the dosage is very much going to be down to you, your body weight, and how much you use. I normally use about 400 micrograms a day, and that works tremendously well for me. But I'm 83, 84, 85 kilos, depending on what time I weigh myself. So you may want to adjust that to you. But for me, on top of keeping your nutrition clean, they're probably the only two supplements that I would 100% have in my arsenal if I was back in college and I was studying a lot, particularly something like law, where there's a lot of actual retention, where you need to remember certain court cases, you need to remember a lot of information through the year so that you can repeat it back during exams. It's different in different degrees, like marketing, where there's a lot more speaking and a lot more thinking on your feet. But things where you have to retain the information, or even in the 6 week period leading up to exams, that's when I would add these supplements in. But nothing's going to top having your nutrition good, getting good night's sleep. When you sleep, you're effectively downloading your day. When you go into REM sleep, your rapid eye movement sleep, your body and brain, your brain is downloading everything that you've consumed during the day. That's why one of the biggest mistakes students make during exam time is they stay up all night cramming. that's literally one of the worst things you can do, even in the most recent studies and studies over the last few years, because when you're downloading that information, and one of the reasons when you study before bed and you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning and remember everything you studied the night before, that's because your brain has been downloading it. When you go into sleep deprivation, you don't retain that information as well. So cramming coming into exams is a terrible idea, assuming that it's affecting your sleep in a negative way. By all means, cram during the day, but sacrificing your sleep so you only get 2 hours sleep so that you can study more coming into exam normally has the opposite effect. So over the next year for studying, they're kind of my top tips. Get your nutrition right, consider adding in those supplements, even though they're just supplementing what you may be missing in your diet, and make sure that you're getting a good night's sleep during the year and particularly leading into exam times. Okay, next question comes in from Colonel7 on Instagram. What are good business books to read? Okay, so I sometimes find it hard to recommend general books on business or fitness or health or diet, because depending on where you're at in your life, different books are going to massively help and serve and support you depending on if you're ready to accept the information. I put in my book, The Fitness Mindset, the Buddha quote that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's kind of how books are. I've spoken a lot on my Snapchat, and I put up all the books I'm listening to on Snapchat. So if you're not on my Snapchat, BrianK019, I put all my audiobooks that I'm listening to, all the physical books I'm reading. I go through 2 or 3 books a week. I put them all on my Snapchat, and then I talk through the best ones so that you don't even have to read them yourself, and I just give you the golden nuggets that I've taken from it. In terms of business, it's very much going to be down to where you're struggling with and what position of the life cycle you're in. If you've never started a business or never done anything in business, a good decent book to start with is The E-Myth Revisited, which basically talks through the life cycles of a business, and it compares business to the life cycle of a child, where you have the infant stage, the toddler stage, the teenager stage, the adult stage, the mature stage. And it basically just ties along with our life cycle as people. That's a good book for a bit of an introduction on what you can expect over the coming years of starting a business. However, if you're someone that really struggles with your marketing, you might want to check out some of Gary Vaynerchuk's books. His Ask Gary V, Jab, 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 Right Hook, Crush It, which are all basically based on social media marketing and using marketing to expand your brand and expand your name and expand your business so you have more reach and you can bring in more customers, potential customers. So it's very much depending on what you need and where you're struggling with. The one recommendation of a book that I would recommend, and this is the one that I'm going to tie my name to now, for the majority of people who are considering starting a business or who are already in a business that isn't making, that's making, that you're just making a profit. If you're making, you know, 6, 7, 8 figures a year, by all means, you don't need to even read this book. You probably already have this concept. But for anyone that's still under that, if you're earning less than $100,000 a year, or you're just earning $20,000 a year, or you're just making a profit, or you're just starting, one of the books and the idea in the book is The Lean Startup, which talks about the minimal viable product and making sure that you prove your concept of your idea before you throw all your money into it and all your energy into it. So The Lean Startup is effectively where you bring out a product or a service as good as you can make it, but you bring it to the market, you see if people like it, and then you pivot it and you tweak it and you change it and you test it, and then you make the adaptions so that by the end of a 6-month period, 12-month period, 18-month period, that you're mastering and remastering your product or service, and you haven't spent 2 years building something that nobody wants. So one of the biggest tips I can offer, and this is my personal tip in a business, as somebody that's been very, very fortunate with the way I built and scaled my business, is ask people what they want. My GA Lean Body program, which is probably not my flagship program, was down to asking people, how can I help you? How can I serve you? What can I give you? What do you want me to create? And people ask me about the GA Lean Body Program. They're like, do you have a program that you can build more muscle and improve your performance so that you can look like a fitness model, but you can actually try and break into county teams or senior teams? I was like, no, but I will create that. And that's my bread and butter. I played GA for 20 years. I was a professional fitness model. So I merged the best of both worlds and effectively created my GA Lean Body Program and tested that and gave people what they were asking asking for. My GEA youth program, which is my new program, came off the back of all the people that are going back to school saying, I don't know how to eat when I go to school. I don't know how to get bigger or build muscle. I don't know how to lose body fat. And I don't know how to break into my under 17 or minor team next year. So I was like, okay, I'll create that program. And I built in a study module for those that were trying to do into their leaving cert or an exam year so that they knew how to study better. That comes down to asking people what they want and then building an MVP, a minimum viable product, on serving everything you can and then mastering it and remastering it. So you get it out there to market first and then you pivot and you change it depending on what the feedback is. The Lean Startup, and I can't remember the author, Eric, I can't remember his surname, the Lean Startup talks about the minimum viable product. I'm not a massive fan of the entire book. I think if you can get the concept of minimum viable product off what I've just said, that's the golden nugget that I took away from it. But if you need more context on that, that's the book I would read for business for the majority of people, because that means that you end up giving people what they want and not what you think they want, and you end up tailoring it and giving it to them. Because business is about helping and serving more people. The people that serve people on a bigger scale get more money, get more customers, do better. Apple are a billion-dollar company because more people have iPhones than anything else, because they help and serve more people and give them what they want. All Netflix are the same. Netflix completely put Blockbuster out of business because they adapted with the times and they were able to give people what they want. On-demand TV, when they wanted, in the palm of their hand, on their tablet, and giving them shows that they could binge watch one after the other. Netflix gave people what they wanted. They started with a minimum viable product that was effectively where they used to send you out a DVD and you could return it anytime you wanted, and then you got another one, and then they moved online. So you're finding out what your customer wants and then you're giving them that. Start with a minimum viable product, provide more value than anybody else, tweak it as you need to, master your product or service, remaster it, provide more value, and continue that cycle with new products and services. That's how you build a business. That's what I took from the Lean Startup. That's what I've taken from most business books that I've read. And that's the one that I would advise you read. But it very much depends on where you're struggling with in business and then filling the void and filling the gap with the book that serves the purpose to making you better at marketing, making you better at sales, making you better at advertising, or making you better at designing products and services. Read the books that support that. But the Lean Startup and the Minimum Viable Product is probably going to be my recommendation for the majority of people listening. Okay, next question comes in from Kaha Cosgrove. How do I know if my glutes are firing? So for those of you following my social media, one of the major things I talk about, particularly with my athletes, my GAA players, hurlers, footballers, camogie players, ladies footballers, is down to the concept of getting your glutes to fire, which is effectively another way of saying your glute activation, where your muscles in your glutes, which is your bum, your ass, your glute muscles, are effectively firing and so that they're working better. So when you go onto the pitch, they activate faster, which means you can take off quicker. So for the majority of athletes, particularly anyone that's in a sport like GAA or soccer or rugby, where you're twisting, turning, sprinting, you want to make sure that your hip flexors are loose and your glutes are firing, because a lot of your power is coming from that region. Again, you want everything to your kinetic chain loose. You want to make sure your system is strong with compound lifts in the gym so that you're able to break through tackles, all these other things. But glute firing and glute activation and getting those to fire is probably going to be the biggest determinant on how fast you are taking off. And in a sport where you're going one-to-one with your marker to a ball or to a puck or to a slither or to a whatever it is that's in front of you, you want to make sure that your glutes are firing and activating faster than the other person. So to know if they're firing, you want to make sure you're building your entire gym program around the concept of getting your glutes to contract and fire better and faster and connect with that muscle so that when you go onto the pitch, that muscle is used to activating and then automatically activates when you go to sprint. So to expand on that, certain movements like reverse lunges, sumo glute deadlifts, barbell box squats where you squeeze up to your glutes, getting your glutes to fire is down to activating them and squeezing that muscle and releasing them at the bottom of movements. So if you're doing a glute squat or a glute deadlift, or a glute, we'll stick with a glute squat, you're dropping down low with a slightly wider stance than normal. You're feeling a little bit of a stretch on your glute at the bottom of the move, and then as you come up, you explode up and you squeeze through your glutes. You effectively squeeze your ass cheeks together, And that contraction of your glutes is what's getting them to fire. So the combination of doing the right parameters, doing the right movements, doing the right tempos around that system of contracting your glutes is what effectively gets that muscle firing better. When it fires better and then you go onto the pitch, that muscle has got so used to firing in the gym that when you go to take off, it fires faster than the person that's beside you. So it means you can increase your overall takeoff speed so that you can get faster to a ball and that you're going to be faster than you were when you started doing a program designed around glute firing. So the reason it's so effective for athletes and one of the reasons that so many of the testimonies that come back from the GA Lean Body Program is normally always a body compositional change because we fix the nutrition, we keep a little bit of hypertrophy, we do some metabolic conditioning depending on the version of the GA Lean Body Program you're on. But one of the things that always comes back is I'm bigger, stronger, and faster. Because you're getting your glutes to fire, you're doing compound lifts that's improving your overall central nervous system strength, and then when you're releasing your hip flexors, when you're keeping everything loose to your kinetic chain, you're going to get a better engagement in your glutes, which means you're going to be able to take off faster, which is absolutely crucial in a sport like GAA, football, hurling, ladies football or camogie, because you are your takeoff speed. If you're able to break through tackles, you've got a good skill set from practicing on the weak areas of your game, you're going to be very, very hard to mark. If you're faster than you were and you're stronger than you were and you're improving your skill set, it makes you an overall better player. And that's effectively how you feel your glutes firing, is making sure you're releasing them at the bottom of a movement and you're squeezing them at the top on a reverse lunge, on a squat, on a sumo glute deadlift, or whatever variation of exercise you're doing to activate and fire your glutes. Okay, next question comes in from 7881 on Snapchat. I took a year off and a half off training to focus on family and business. Is it too late to start back? Will I get the results I did at the beginning? Okay, so for those of you who have ever started training first, particularly your first ever time going to the gym or lifting weights or getting your nutrition right, you get what's called beginner gains. It's where your body responds faster than it does at any other period in your life when you train. That first 6, 12, 18 month period, and you've started eating more food, good quality food, you started lifting weights for resistance training, your body can tend to take shape faster than in any other period. It's called in the fitness circle beginner gains. So this question is, if you've taken a year and a half out, will you still get beginner gains when you go back? The long and the short is maybe. It very much is dependent on how long you were training before that period. If you were training for 10 years before that period or 5 years before that period and you take a year and a half off, you'll get what's called muscle memory. It's where the muscle that you had beforehand will come back faster because your body is remembering, or your muscle is remembering what it was like to be that size, be that shape, be that condition. And then assuming you're doing all the things that got you in that shape before and prior to the year and a half, you end up going back to that state. It's the same reason that you see athletes who have surgery and can't lift a finger for 6 months, they get really skinny or really heavy or really out of shape, and then they're back training for 6 months and they look the way they did before. That's down to muscle memory kicking in. Beginner gains and muscle memory are two different things. If, for example, you took a year off, or you were training for a year and then took a year and a half off, you may get some of your beginner gains back again, but it very much is dependent on how hard you're pushing your training session, how strict your nutrition is in terms of being in alignment with your goals and the effort you're putting in. The truth is, it doesn't matter your training period or how long you've taken off. If you're a first-time trainer and you've never done anything before, you've been training for 3 or 4 years and you've just started getting serious about it, or you've been training for 10 or 15 years, you can always improve and progress, assuming that you keep changing things up. You switch up your training programs, you change up your nutrition so you're following plans that are in alignment with your goals, and you're changing your macros or calorie intake around what your specific goals are, and then you're changing your training program so that you're making sure that you have muscle confusion and you can continually progress. I'll use myself because your own best example. I'm nearly 17 years training and I still continually progress. It's slower now than it was for the first 2 or 3 years, but I continually progress because I switch up my workouts every 6 weeks. I switch up my nutrition when I change my goals. And when you're doing that, you can continually move forward and continually progress. And progressing might be for you just maintaining what you have. So if you're somebody that's listening to this and you're like, I just want to maintain, you can do that as well. You just have to keep changing things up so that your body doesn't get used to what you're doing. If you are going to the gym for the last 6 months and you've been doing the same program and you're not getting any bigger, you're not getting any leaner, you're not losing any more weight, you're not dropping any more dress sizes, and you're not responding, it's a sign and a feedback that you need to switch something up. You need to go onto a new training program. You need to switch up your nutrition. You need to do something that confuses your body so that you can continue to move and improve. The reason that we work, particularly building muscle and losing body fat, is the same effectively, is your body is adapting to the stressor you're putting on it. When you're training, you're putting a stressor on your body, and when you break down those fibers or tear down those fibers, your body has to grow back bigger or stronger or leaner in a case of a deficit, just to set yourself up so that if you put that, your body under that stress again, that it's going to be able to cope with it. That's effectively how you build more muscle. It's effectively how you change your body composition. It's just an evolutionary survival adaptation that we have, that when you stress the body, it has to change as a result to be able to comply with that stress next time. So when you train hard and you tear down a load of fibers, your body has to sends a signal to say, well, we need to get stronger, we need to get bigger, because if we do this again, we need to be able to handle it. And that's all you're doing with training. You're effectively just stressing your muscular system so that you're able to grow it bigger and stronger in the case of building more size, and losing body fat is effectively the same, just in reverse, where you're going into a calorie deficit to do that. So to answer your question, you can always progress regardless of your time period off. It's just making sure that you switch things up so that you're not just falling into the same routine of doing the same thing every single gym session, eating the same foods all the time, every single day, and not responding. Like Einstein says, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're doing the same workouts over and over again, but you're expecting your body to change, that's the definition of an insanity. So it's a feedback to your body that it's time to switch it up. One of the reasons in my Top 50 program, in my VKF online program, I switch up the workouts on week 3 and week 6 is to provide this new stimulus. You'll get 6 weeks out of a program. Some might even get 8 or 12 weeks. But you need, I switch it up on week 3 and week 6 just to ensure that there's no stagnation or plateau with anybody. But by all means, as long as you're switching it up consistently and regularly, you're going to continue to improve regardless of the program you're following. Okay, next question comes in from Anonymous. I hooked up with a work colleague at an Xmas party. I know he has a girlfriend, but I'm really into him. I'm trying to be a dick to him, and I'm thinking of moving jobs. What should I do? Okay, so this has been a little bit of a trend in the podcast recently where I've been answering a bit more of lifestyle. Be sure to hit me up on DM and let me know if you enjoy these lifestyle questions, because the only reason I've been continually answering them is because of the feedback and people messaging saying that, look, that episode where you talked about the guys only use me for sex or how to handle a breakup, I was getting very positive messages and feedback back from people on it. So I continue to do a lifestyle question at the end of these Q&As. But be sure to hit me up on DM if you're finding value in them, or if you'd rather I didn't do them. Be sure to let me know, because I base all the podcast episodes on feedback, what people put in reviews, what people tell me in Snapchat, what people tell me in DM on Instagram. I work off the feedback that you give me, so be sure to keep me posted. So in the context of this answer, this one is a little bit of a tricky situation, and I'm going to answer it because I've been asked similar variations of this on my Snapchat Q&A, and the truth is, it's a very, very difficult situation for a couple of reasons. One, if you hook up with a work colleague, I love the phrase that they say, you shouldn't shit what you eat. And that's kind of what happens when you hook up with a work colleague. You always end up putting yourself in a position for more drama than it's potentially worth. So there's a couple of ways in which you can handle this. And I can offer what I would probably want you to do on the side as the guy, and what I would probably do in the situation if I was you. If it was the situation that I was the guy and I had hooked up with you at a Christmas party and I had a girlfriend, I would want to make sure that my relationship with you stayed the way it had been before and prior, that there wasn't any uncomfortableness or discomfort. Now, again, not getting into the morality of cheating on your girlfriend, that's each to their own and how they handle it and how they deal with it. But in this situation, if that had been the situation that had occurred, I would want you to talk to me about it. Literally have it as the elephant in the room, because I can imagine when you haven't dealt with that, there's an elephant in the room that's been hanging there for 7, 8, 9 months. I would talk to him about the situation, be like, look, I need to just get this out in the open. We need to go through this. This is what happened. This is where we're at now, and see what the situation is. So from a point of view of him, and what I would do as you, for clarity and on both sides, I would have the conversation with him and find out where you stand with the whole situation. Because the truth is, there's only going to be one of three outcomes. One is you're both going to realize that it was a one-night thing. Nothing major is coming from it. It's something that happened, and you go back to living your life as normal, and you work together, and that's all you are. Number two, you end up realizing that he's really into you as well. He may potentially leave his girlfriend and or stay with her and end up having a relationship with you, which is not what I advise you doing, but that's a situation that could come. Number three is you end up having a very toxic relationship and you can't put it behind you and you end up moving jobs or leaving. That's realistically one of the three things that's going to happen. So you have to be prepared for all three things mentally, because it could be as equally all three. So what I would do is, in this exact situation, particularly if I was still into the person, I would tell him. I would go up and say, look, I need to talk to you about that time we hooked up at Christmas. It's been on my mind for months. I'm into you. I just really need to know where I stand with you. I know you have a girlfriend. And then whatever he says, you need to take that at face value. If he goes, look, I made a mistake. I love my girlfriend. I want to stay with her. Then you need to respect that decision. He may come back and be like, okay, well, actually, you know what? I'm really into you as well. Maybe we could make something work here. And then that's another discussion and another conversation for another time, potentially. But you need to find out, because it's the not knowing that kills us. Normally, we always get up in our own head about, and the reason I'm answering this question is because we all do this, where we get up in our own head about a situation, we all get up in our own head and we can't see the forest amongst the trees, and we're so engrossed in what's going on in our situation that we can't actually see what's really going on in life. We can't see the reality of the situation because we are up in our own story, we're up in our own head that, oh, well, I'm really into this guy, and you can't focus on anything else. Maybe I should leave jobs, maybe I shouldn't talk to him. The truth is, all of that conflict can be resoluted by having the conversation. I spoke about it in my book in the mindset section that normally, when you're trying to avoid conflict with someone, that's where all your growth and your happiness is going to come from. And I spoke about it as the analogy that when you're in the gym and you're hurting your muscles and your legs are hurting from doing leg day, that all the growth is coming from the pain of the workout. Conflict avoidance is the same. Your unhappiness is coming from avoiding that conflict, which is effectively the conversation that you need to have. So I would ask yourself, and this is for anybody that's listening in all areas of your life, what's the conversation you're avoiding having? Because that's the one you need to have. Because all your happiness is on the other side of that conversation. The same way as all your leg growth, all your glute growth, all your arm growth is on the other side of a painful workout. You're tearing those fibers down so they grow back stronger and you have bigger muscles, you have a leaner body. Having those conversations lead to a happier outlook on life, because the thing and the conflict that's making you feel sad and unhappy in life, you're just avoiding it. So I would have that conversation, and regardless of who it is that's listening right now, then we've all done this, we've all had this, where we've avoided a person, or we've avoided a conversation, or we've avoided a situation because we didn't want to deal or handle with it, and as a result, we're anxious, we're up in our head about it, we're making up stories about it. What is that conversation for you? And my advice would be is go have that conversation, because it's never as bad as you think it is. The fear, and fear is an acronym, false evidence appearing real. That fear of what may happen is always way worse in your head than it is in reality. So my advice would be go have the conversation with him, see what he has to say, and then regardless of what his answer is, at least you won't be wondering what if. Does he like me? Should we try and work it out? Should I move jobs? Because it will become clear when you have that conversation. And I would offer that advice for anybody in all areas of life. What situation, what conversation, what person, what area of your life are you avoiding now? Because that may be the one that you need to step into, because behind every fear is a person you want to be. And on the side of all conflict avoidance is normally happiness. Okay, that's everything from today's episode. So be sure to hit me up on DM. I'm dying to know, do you get value from these last questions that I've been adding to the end of the Q&A? So I've been trying to do fitness and nutrition for the first four questions and then picking a lifestyle one at the end. But hit me up, let me know. If you don't like it, hit me up on DM and go, look, I don't really like those. I prefer if you stuck with fitness. If you're finding you're getting value from them, let me know, because I'm basically just going off feedback that people, whether you're finding value from it. And my goal in the podcast and everything I do is to try and provide as much value as my thank you for you taking the time to listen to the podcast. So be sure to hit me up on DM on Instagram, hit me up on Snapchat on BrianK019, and keep me posted with how you find the podcast, good, bad, or indifferent. I don't take criticism badly. I love constructive criticism. It really helps me grow and helps me gauge what direction I take my content and take the podcast. So be sure to hit me up on DM or Snapchat and let me know what you think. So for more information on my programs, my GA Lean Body program, my BKF online program, or my new GA youth program, head over to my website, www.briankeenfitness.com. My Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram is all Brian Keen Fitness. My Snapchat, BrianK019. And a massive thank you to Conor McBoxonic, who puts together all my podcasts. Catch you all soon.